much, still over $105 a barrel. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. The voice is still a little thin today. I was a little bit sick this past weekend. Actually missed the church service there for the first time, I think, in at least a year. Always hate doing that, and I'm so grateful for the people at church, of course, who were able to cover for me. The elder there, Mike Tarduno, and then also a couple of the other guys there at church, the music team, Joe Johnson, I think, covered for me in the evening service, and they're actually going to be covering for me tonight as well. I had a couple things going on there, allergy-wise, a little bit of sickness-wise, other things going on, and so I'm just glad to be back here in the studio, but the voice, like I say, is a little thin today, and so just bear with me. Got an interesting program put together today. It's a Worldview Wednesday edition of the program. So, of course, we'll be meeting in the first portion of the program with one of the folks from World Magazine, and up first is going to be Edward Lee Pitts. Edward is the Washington Bureau Chief for World Magazine. I haven't been able to speak with Edward in a while. Actually had something come up last Wednesday, I think it was, or the Wednesday before that. Edward was scheduled to be on then, but I was out of town. I was actually in Columbia at visiting a prison there in Columbia. But so I had to cancel that that interview with Edward, so I'm glad to have him back on the program today. We're going to be speaking with him about the Santorum Surge. We've actually titled the broadcast today, Political Surge and Popular Delusion. And I'll tell you, the first part of that title today is speaking about the Santorum Surge. And so we'll talk about Edward's recent article in the latest issue of World Magazine called The New Surge, Big Santorum Wins Shake Up the GOP Campaign. And since he has written that for the latest issue, even more has taken place, even just the last day or so, related to the Santorum campaign. So we'll talk to him about those issues in just a moment. On the second half of the program, we're going to talk about a related issue as well under that heading of popular delusion. And I'll tell you what I mean by that is one of the things that has taken place in the Santorum surge was he made a statement recently about Barack Obama and about his theology. And when asked about it, he did step back a little bit. I wish he had actually been a little bit more forceful in his clarification statements about what he said. But anyways, he stepped back a little bit, and he said that his comments were tied to Barack Obama's views about worldview in general, but also, in more particular, his views related to the environment. His views related to the environment relate to what we want to talk about on the second half of the program. We want to talk with our special guest will be Matt Patterson. Matt just recently, I think it was on the 17th, he posted an article out on Fox News on the opinion page that was entitled Global Warming, the Great Delusion. Matt Patterson is a Warren Brooks Fellow at the Competitive Institute, Enterprise Institute, and a senior editor at the Capital Research Center. And so he's going to be on with me on the second half of the broadcast to work through that that article that he wrote. It was very interesting. He ties it back to a book from 1841 in which a Scottish journalist by the name of Charles Mackay published a study about mass hysteria. I said a book, but it was actually a study about mass hysteria and it was entitled Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And it talks about what that that study talked about, some of the pathologies involved in mass hysteria, and then he likens it to the hysteria that's taking place today over global warming. I thought it was very interesting. A good buddy out there, Dave Kruber, from Mist Valley Coffee, and from he's also working with his brother on Together for Adoption. He posted that on his Facebook page today. I was grateful that he did. I read that article and then said that would make a great addition to our program today. So there's where we're going. Let's go first to Edward Lee Pitts. Lee, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. Hope you're feeling better.
Feeling a little bit better. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I guess you're not at the Capitol today. Didn't they have a little bit of a scare going on with a couple of senators receiving, was it packages or envelopes or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not quite aware. They're on recess right now, and I'm gearing up for the presidential debate tonight. So Congress is kind of quiet, and no lawmakers are there anyway. They're on their President's Day recess. So, you know, most people get Monday off of President's Day, but Congress gets the whole week off. So.
Oh, they take it. They had a few more presidents in there, I guess. Are you in Arizona then? Are you still in Washington?
I'm in Washington, yes, sir. I'm in Washington.
Okay, so we're looking forward to this debate. The incident I was referring to, just so I don't leave that hanging, is I think a couple of offices of I think a few of the senators. I should have this before me. Maybe I'll look it up here real quick and clarify it. But I think they received some suspicious packages, white powder in those packages. The initial analysis, if I heard right, was that they weren't anthrax or anything like that. But nevertheless, they take all of these threats very seriously. And I think if I recall those details correctly, that's what came across the news cycle there this morning. And so that's what I was referring to. In that same news cycle, of course, is a number of things politically that are taking place. And, Lee, you've been focused primarily, at least in this article, on this sudden surge of Rick Santorum. Give us a little bit of a summation of what you've written about and what's taking place with the senator, or the former senator.
Yeah, well, as everybody knows, he's one of the front runners now. He's leading Romney in some polls and tied with him in other polls. And, of course, it's been a topsy-turvy race where no lead has been safe. And the factors for his surge have been several reasons. One is that persistent anybody but Romney feeling that many Republican conservatives have, that people just can't seem to warm to Romney, and that's given different candidates their time in the spotlight, from Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann and Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich. Now it looks like it's Santorum's turn as the anybody but Romney candidate. The other thing that has helped him is the recent surge in social issues, the economy and the job market, and has been taken kind of center stage for a lot of the past few months. But now suddenly social issues such as the contraceptive mandate that the Obama administration is pushing on Catholic churches and others is now starting to get more voters interested into the social issues and the ramifications of another 4 years of the Obama administration, what that could mean for social issues. And Santorum has long been kind of the leader in the social issue field among conservative Republicans, and so he is now enjoying his time in the spotlight.
I agree. It seems like the planets have kind of lined up there for Rick Santorum's message to just be underlined or underscored a little bit more, and so all of a sudden that was given a little bit of some airtime, and when that became one of the popular items under consideration, I think you're right. It made Rick Santorum look a lot better in the eyes of a number of conservatives. I think another thing that seemed to take place, and you tell me if you agree, but in that one debate, and I don't exactly remember which one it was, it may have been in Florida, I'm not positive, there were so many of them now, they're all a blur, but I remember where he specifically went on the attack a little bit stronger, and he not only really confronted Mitt Romney and his Massachusetts mandate, very strongly, but he also lumped in Newt Gingrich in that as well and said that he had voted along that line and, you know, he was very, there was very little difference between what he was advocating, between what Romney had was advocating. And I thought that that was a real turning point in Santorum's campaign. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. You know, interestingly enough, I'm working on a story for our next issue of World Magazine where we look at Santorum's Senate career, and he was called Senator Slash. He had a nickname, Senator Slash, when he was in the Senate because he was always, he was kind of this attacking, take no prisoners mindset, and he kind of, you know, kind of fiery in the Senate, and he admitted that he was there to kind of shake things up and shoot a warning shot across the bow of Senate traditions. And so we kind of look back on that. So and it seems like that Senator Slash mindset or persona, while it's kind of been tempered and matured lately, and it's starting to kind of come alive again as he gets more traction and more attention. He's starting to reach down some of his Senator Slash reputation as far as being going after his opponents. One thing though as well is, that we should attribute to it is his shoe leather efforts. He's been on the ground, and he's spent 105 days in Iowa and 314 events in Iowa. By contrast, Romney just spent 19 days there, and so Santorum's wins in some of these states. He's won four states, and it's kind of a triumph of old-fashioned shoe leather politics over the old political money machine that Romney is using, and whether or not Santorum will be able to maintain that as states get larger and ads get more expensive is going to be the question that we face heading into Super Tuesday when 10 states go to the poll the first Tuesday in March. But as a sign that, as you were suggesting earlier in the debate, how he was attacking Romney Care and tying even Newt Gingrich to the previous support of the insurance mandate, he did release an ad where this last week on Valentine's Day, no less, February 14th, Santorum released an ad where he has a lookalike of Romney running around shooting what looks like a paint gun at a cardboard cutout of Santorum, and the paint gun is shooting mud. Mm. So he's suggesting Romney slinging mud. And it's called Rombo. It's kind of a play on Rambo. So it's a pretty aggressive attack ad, and it kind of signals that Santorum is getting into the fray. You know, he was known for some of the debates earlier. His high likability factor was because he kind of had these sleeveless sweater vests, and he was had an everyman likability, and people were attracted to that. But in order to maybe maintain his surge, he's going to have to kind of take off the gloves and rechannel that Senator Slash reputation that he had as a go-getter.
Mm-hmm. I noted that when Newt Gingrich had surged, especially here in South Carolina, that the difference between him and Santorum was that Newt seemed to be able to really articulate the message. Santorum seemed so much more timid in doing so. Although I agreed with his stance, like you said, he had visited so many different areas, especially in Iowa, right? And he had been there for a long period of time and, really did the shoe leather work, like you said. I actually had an experience here. I was asked to speak at the National Prayer event that took place here locally in downtown Greenville, a National Day of Prayer. I was asked to open up in prayer for that event. And while I was standing there with some of the people getting ready, Rick Santorum walked up. And so he walked up into our little group that was there, so shook hands with them before going up to the podium and talked with them for a couple of moments. But here he shows up at an event here. So he really did a lot of the legwork on getting out there and meeting with people. But having said that about his message seemed timid, and more specifically what I meant about him zeroing in, he was able to say with Romney that, say to the conservatives, listen, we can't have a guy go up there who is going to have to give up on the biggest issue that we're going to go after the president with, which is going to be Obamacare. We can't give up that issue. So he was very succinct in his attack there. It was very targeted, and then, which made sense, I think, to a lot of conservatives. And then also with Newt, who I was a Newt fan, but I think he's imploded here. It really, the prophecy of Santorum has come true. But he said that, Newt was basically unstable, and we were a little bit unsure of what he was going to say next. Well, sure enough, he goes to Florida, and Newt gets off message. He starts talking about space colonies and, you know, these types of things. He's admitting it on TV today, saying that he took the bait and started to go negative there, and now he's back again trying to go positive. So Santorum seems to have this uncanny ability to really zero in on where these other conservative candidates, he did the same with Ron Paul, where these other conservative candidates would not be able to stand up against the president. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. One of the things people have been knocking Gingrich on, like you said, is that he took it too personally, and he took the attacks he was facing and took them personally, and it kind of was painful to watch on the public stage and didn't look very presidential. One thing about Santorum is he does have experience kind of on the stage, and as a senator, he was on the Senate floor debating against Ted Kennedy when they were debating on the key bills in the Senate, such as the balanced budget amendment. He was going against other liberal senators when he was leading the Senate debate to ban a partial birth abortion. So even as a freshman senator, he was taking on some of these liberal lions, so to speak. So he does have experience in the fire of going up against hard hitters, and we'll see how he handles it now that all the Romney machine money and manpower will be aimed toward him more than Gingrich now.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy for him to appear above the fray and wear his sleeveless vest when all the attention, negative attention, is focused on Gingrich. But now that he's kind of the top challenger to Romney, it's going to be his turn to be a scrutiny.
Yeah.
And the scrutiny will intensify.
I hope his debate skills, you know, I really liked his policies per se. I liked, of course, his strong emphasis on social conservatism. He really has been a pro-life advocate, head and shoulders above everybody else who is running. There's no doubt about it. I just didn't think he had the skill set. I just didn't think he had the tool bag there to really take it to Obama the way it needed to be done, especially during the debates. I hope that now that he's gone through a number of these debates, I do see him improving in that area. It's going to be interesting. I think it's tonight, right, the debate. And so to see if that is the case. My wife, when we were sitting there watching, said he always comes across as kind of angry. He's a little bit of a curmudgeon. What's that word? You know, just an angry man, you know. Curmudgeon, that's what I'm trying to think of. And, you know, so he's comes across that way. But I hope that he can articulate his messages a little bit better, and we'll see. Let's go ahead and play a little cut from him. This was his statement that he made about the theology, where he tried to clarify his fuzzy theology statement about Barack Obama.
I've repeatedly said that I believe the president's Christian. He says he's a Christian, but I am talking about his worldview or his the way he approaches problems in this country, and I think they're different than how most people do in America.
It's a very short clip, but there's one of the, not a retraction, but it's supposed to be a clarification. You know, he said the president in that his theology, and then he said, well, it's not a biblical theology, which I agree with. And I don't, do you feel that the clarification helped? Do you feel that the original statement is good for Rick Santorum? What do you think about this whole issue?
Well, it did get him a lot of attention when he said that last weekend, and you know, when you take the quotes out of context, it created a firestorm. But I went back and looked at the entire speech, I think yesterday, and probably he was focused on the environment, Obama's environmental policies, and his view that it elevates Earth above man, or that man is here to serve the Earth as opposed to the other way around. And so, I don't think his clarification was really a clarification, other than for him, you know, he was pointing people to look back at his entire comments rather than just take it out of context, because that's what he had been saying from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And so when he's trying to say that there, you know, then he had to say, well, I think that he is a, if he says he's a Christian, then he is a Christian, and these types of things. But I think that recent prayer breakfast, he could have played off of that a little bit in Eric Metaxas's statement at the National Prayer Breakfast. I think that he really hit the nail on the head that, you know, just because you use Christian language doesn't necessarily you know, make a person a Christian. So he got himself in that situation there where he had to go back and forth a little bit. All in all, do you think the latest one here has been about his comments with the U.S., the difference between evil and good, and whether or not Satan has the U.S. in his sights? How do you think this is going to play out for the senator?
Well, I mean, like we were saying earlier, this is another example of he's going to face greater scrutiny, and everything he says is going to be, you know, sliced and diced. And a lot of people in the mainstream media, as well as, you know, Democrats, are confused and uncomfortable by some of Senator Santorum's, you know, social stance, his beliefs in the sanctity of life and the traditional family and support of stay-at-home moms and all that stuff kind of puzzles a lot of people, including, you know, members of the media. So he's going to face a lot of questions about that, and they're going to try to, you know, depict him as kind of outside the mainstream and as too extreme right on social issues and unelectable in a general election. He won't appeal to independents and moderates. That's kind of things they're going to paint too. I've heard them talk a lot about his book that he wrote a couple years ago called It Takes a Family, mm-hmm. which he wrote in response to Hillary Clinton's book It Takes a Village. You know, Santorum arguing that instead of a village, the most central, you know, foundational function for a healthy person is a strong family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been pulled out, some of the quotes he said in that about abortion and about marriage and stay-at-home moms has been questioned and brought back out again. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this debate is very, very key, obviously, for both him and Romney. For Santorum, tonight's debate will show whether he can withstand the fire, that intensity, and the fire, that scrutiny, if he can not take it personal like Gingrich did, and if he can still stand strong on his principles and strong on his core convictions. And for Romney, the debate today is going to see if he can, you know, vanquish anybody but Romney can. And this time, Santorum, he's had to overcome numerous other candidates in the past who've taken his front runner lead, and people are going to start to seriously doubt Romney's viability as the nominee if he has to keep fighting off these challengers.
Mm-hmm. Let me play one more clip and get your response. This is related to the Santorum on the insurance contraception issue.
This is about religious liberty, number one, with telling a church what they can and can't have in their insurance policy. It's about the government telling you what you have to buy. And that's wrong.
Now, do you think that on that issue, he seemed to get a little bit pigeonholed on just the contraception part of it and didn't seem to have the ability to broaden it out into a free speech or a religious rights issue rather than just contraception itself? Do you think he was able to do that well enough in that particular debate?
Well, I think the challenge is that when he tries to do that, or when other conservatives try to do that, the mainstream media is not going to follow that or cover that as well, because they're more interested. It's an easier depiction than just focus on a contraceptive. It gets people fired up. It gets groups angry about that view of it. And rather than, you know, the whole philosophical debate over religious liberty and religious freedom seems to be adding or attention grabbing for members of the media, you know, when they try to get, you know, people to pay attention to their website or their TV program. So I think that's going to be the challenge that all these social conservative candidates face. The bigger issue is religious liberty and religious freedom, but the, you know, mainstream media also going to continue to push, you know, the more headline grabbing contraceptive part of it.
Last question, Lee. What should we watch for tonight? I would assume an issue like immigration is going to be a big part, being there in Arizona. Is that going to be the key issue that we should keep our eye on there tonight in the debate?
Yeah, I definitely think immigration will take up a lot of time tonight. I also expect them to talk about some of the international issues such as Syria and Iran and what America's response should be for that as if they were commander-in-chief. And I also expect them to talk about, obviously I think the religious liberty and religious freedom that we talked about with the contraceptive issue will be touched on, as well as the economy. I'm sure they'll ask to explain what their thoughts are on the economy and some of its slight improvements and the slight improvement of the job market and what they think about what they would do to continue that upswing.
Mm-hmm. Especially as gas prices are soaring right now as well. Well, thank you very much, Lee, for your insight today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Kevin. You enjoy your rest of your day.
Okay. That was Edward Lee Pitts from World Magazine. Edward is the, Washington Bureau Chief for World Magazine. You can check out his article and a number of other great articles out at www.worldmag.com. That's www.worldmag.com. We'll be joined in just a few moments by Matt Patterson. Matt is the Warren Brooks Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's also with Capital Research Center. Going to talk to him about global warming. You don't want to miss this. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
This is Hugh Hewitt for the townhall.com Weekend Journal. Each week we have the newsmakers.
You have to close our borders in the sense that we have to know who's coming into this country.
They're basically presenting children who believe that they are the wrong gender and want to change gender. And it's being presented that parents should allow these children to simply declare themselves to be other than what they are.
Don't miss this week's townhall.com Weekend Journal, where we bring clarity to the week's events.
Sunday evening at 7 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
One of the things most alarming to me about today's culture is how evangelicals are responding to attacks against them. Many believe that somehow just having one's heart in the right place is all that matters, that a passion for Jesus and the life of the mind are somehow mutually exclusive. But burning hearts are not nourished by empty heads. We must develop our minds if we are to sustain godly passion and to have a clear message. Hi, this is R.C. Sproul inviting you to the Ligonier Ministries 2012 National Conference in Orlando, March 15th through the 17th, as we consider the theme of the Christian mind. I'll be joined by Sinclair Ferguson, Robert Godfrey, Michael Horton, Steve Lawson, Al Mohler, Stephen Meyer, R.C. Sproul Jr., and Del Tackett. Call 800-435-4343 now to get the early bird rate or register online at Ligonier.org. I hope to see you there.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, host of the Knowing the Truth radio program. Let me tell you about a special event called Teach Them Diligently, coming March 15th through the 17th to the Spartanburg Expo Center. Parents will learn how to enhance the homeschool instruction of their children. Speakers include Ken Ham, Bodie Bauckham, Doug Phillips, and many more. Plus, there will be over 150 workshops. For more information, go to teachthemdiligently.net.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast today. Today, of course, on Wednesday is our Worldview Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Tomorrow on the program, I'll be joined by Kent and Carrie Hughes. We'll be speaking about the disciplines of a godly young man. Kent Hughes, of course, is well known for writing about that subject. This is his latest book, along with his son, Carrie. They will both be joining me on tomorrow's broadcast, and so that's an interesting way that we're going to do the broadcast tomorrow. And their latest book has just been published by Crossway, and so both of them will be with me on the broadcast to talk about that tomorrow. Also, I wanted to make sure that you were aware, especially the leaders, that church leaders that are listening in the listening audience today, about the upcoming Pastors Fellowship. It will be held on Friday, March 9th, right here in Greenville, South Carolina. This is part of the Pastors Fellowship of the Greater Greenville. We get together a number of evangelical pastors from around the upstate of South Carolina who come together to bring a speaker in to speak to them. This speaker is coming from California. He's going to be speaking about prison ministry. Mark Casson is his name, and he has just teamed up with Ligonier Ministries in order to provide materials for prisoners. And so if you're involved in church leadership and you'd like to come to that event, the cost is only $6, and it includes lunch. We're going to be meeting down at Second Presbyterian Church in downtown Greenville, and that is on, again, Friday, March 9th. And Mark Kasson will be our guest speaker at that event. It's going to be held from 11:30 until 1 o'clock, so it's just a luncheon meeting. You don't want to miss that. If you're a church leader of any sort, pastor, elder, deacon, involved in prison ministry in any way, you're welcome to come to that event in order to learn more about what they're doing at this great work at Metanoia Ministry. That's the name of it. And so we'll be learning a lot about that. If you want to find out more, you want to register, go to my website at knowingthetruth.org. That's www.knowingthetruth.org. The program today, we're talking about two things. Political surge, we're just talking about that with the Santorum campaign, speaking with Edward Lee Pitts, the Washington Bureau Chief for World Magazine. And then the second half of the program, we wanted to talk about popular delusions. It's tied together because of an article that I recently read, in fact, just read it today, an article that was an opinion piece that was written on Fox News, their website, foxnews.com, and it was written by Matt Patterson, and it was entitled Global Warming, The Great Delusion. And I thought Matt did an excellent job in that article tying these two things together. He goes way back into the 1800s to talk about a study that was done about mass hysteria, and then he likens it to what's taking place today. I think Matt could tell the story for us better than I could recount it. So let me go ahead and bring Matt into the discussion. Matt is the Warren Brooks Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's also the senior editor at the Capital Research Center. Matt, it's a pleasure to have you on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast today.
Oh, great to be with you. I hope I can live up to that introduction.
Yeah. It's like, who's going to be on? Right?
I want to hear that guy. Sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
I thought you did a great job, like I was saying, tying it to that that study called Extraordinarily Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. We all know somewhat of what takes place in a crowd mentality. We see this happen when games are won or lost in the NBA or soccer matches and these types of things. What happens with that crowd mentality? But this takes place within society as well, right? There's pathologies that are here that we can look at, that you identify, that take place with trends or movements that take place. Tell us about how you did this in your opinion piece there on Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting phenomenon, the whole phenomenon of mass delusion. And it's more prevalent in human society than people perhaps realize. I mean, we tend to know that in the past a lot of people believed in things like witch crazes and astrology and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we tend to think that those types of mass delusions are a thing of the past. And from my point of view, we are currently in the grips of what is probably the most widespread and possibly most destructive mass delusion in humankind's history, and that is the anthropogenic global warming theory, the theory that man, by his productivity, by his industrial capacity, is poisoning the planet and ensuring his own destruction. There was a book written in 1841 by a Scottish journalist named Charles Mackay. It was called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. It's a fascinating book, and I really recommend it to anyone because so much of what he wrote about is true today still and probably will always be true. And he really wanted to know why people believe things in crowds that they possibly or perhaps would not believe if they were left to reason on their own. Hmm. He was very interested in the phenomenon that crowds generate delusions, and then people latch onto them as a way of getting along in society. You know, you don't want to be different from your neighbors, so you just automatically believe what they believe. It's sort of a social lubricant. And, you know, that's, there's a reason people have that tendency. You know, there was a survival mechanism, I'm sure, at various times in our history. But the downside is that it can lead people to believe things and to do things that are enormously destructive.
That's quite a statement, you know, to say that the most destructive delusion in modern times, but you don't really feel that that's overstating it, right?
No, I don't. And let me tell you why. I mean, I said possible because
right.
What the environmentalists want us to do is really, really frightening. And if we go down the road that environmentalists want us to go down on, it's going to result in millions of people dying of poverty and preventable diseases because they want to turn back the clock on the Industrial Revolution. They want us to forsake all of the gains that we've made in health and wealth and productivity that have really lifted so many millions of people, billions actually, out of poverty. It's a strange hatred of humankind's special potential. And so the global warming delusion is a way of convincing people to turn their back on technology, to turn their back on mankind's productivity. And, you know, you see this, and by the way, this is not theoretical. You see this in Africa. You know, Africa, they desperately want to industrialize in Africa, mm-hmm. which is the only way to lift out of poverty, lift millions of people out of poverty. But Africans and a large portion of the continent are being prevented from industrializing by totally destructive environmental policies that are preventing them from acquiring the resources and the industrial capacity they need because environmentalists think that's bad for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrible. People are suffering because of these delusions. And if we give in to that, millions of people more will suffer.
When we think about global warming, there's really a couple of points that we need to rectify before we could believe in this global warming hysteria that is taking place. You tell me if you agree, first of all, that there has been a warming. We've got to have some way of accurately measuring the fact whether or not the Earth is actually warming or not. Some of those methodologies have been suspect, to say the least, and some of the data has been skewed. We find out now there hasn't been, you know, really good data collection, these types of things. The second point would be that warming is actually to a level that is harmful. A little bit of warming might actually be good, and so we need to consider that. And then third, that man is actually responsible for that harmful warming. Maybe something else. Maybe the fact that we're planting more trees and they give off CO2. Maybe that adds to warming. I don't know. But I'm just saying that we at least need to come to certain conclusions here before we can all of a sudden just start throwing billions, if not trillions of dollars and possibly making a problem even worse. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you make a couple of great points. Let me just take them one by one. First, is the Earth warming? Okay. That is not a simple question to answer because it all depends on the time frame that you look at. Okay,
mm-hmm.
If you look at the last 100 years, I think there's a general consensus that the Earth has warmed about a degree or two, depending on who you ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that if you trust temperature measurements from 100 years ago. You know, obviously, instruments get better over time. I, for one, am a little skeptical that we know for sure what the temperature was like 150 years ago, especially an average temperature of the entire planet. Okay, but let's say you agree that we can measure that with accuracy, and you agree that the Earth has warmed a degree or two over 150 years. To me, that seems remarkably stable.
Right.
A degree or two change in 150 years, to me, seems like an astonishingly stable temperature. That we are lucky to have had, and, you know, a lot of scientists have pointed out that in that last 150 years, in this apparent warming period, mankind has reached a level of wealth and health and success that is completely unprecedented in our species history. I think that if there has been a warming, we have certainly benefited. Now, how could we have benefited? A couple of ways. When you have warmer temperatures, you have longer growing seasons. You have more arable land. You have more land that's available for farming. That's just a couple of reasons why warming is good for people. And by the way, we see this in the historical record, not just recently. You know, if you go back in time, 1,000 years ago, there was a period called the medieval warming period.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know about this. But we know for sure that in Europe and in North America, the temperature was as warm or warmer than it is today, and we know this for a couple of reasons. We know that they were growing vineyards in the north of England and other parts in the north of Europe where they're not able to grow those today. So we know it was warm enough to do that. And that was a period of tremendous art and culture and wealth and flourishing. It was the High Middle Ages. This was the age of the cathedral builders. It was a relatively good time for people, especially coming out of the Dark Ages. Now, go back even further. Before that, 1,000 years before that, there was something called the Roman Warming Period, which again is very well attested in the historical record. This coincided with the height of classical civilization, the Roman civilization. This was a warm period, and again, it appears that that was a very good relative time to be alive as far as the health and the wealth of the average citizen. So you're right. If the earth is warming, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. And then we've got to make some sort of a tie to the idea that man is responsible for that, that the assumption is that industrialization has added to that warming. And the jury's still out on, you know, just how much that could actually contribute to it. The reports that I've seen, you know, a minuscule amount possibly, but certainly nothing that could change the amount, which means that we can't do a whole lot to alter it then back the other way. And so until we, you know, really have a firm grip on what is actually taking place, it seems kind of foolish to offer a solution to what we don't know, if we're not sure what the problem is. Which leads me to this point. These are all logical arguments. The problem is your connection to mass hysteria there just a few moments ago, logical arguments are not winning the day with people. What's winning the day seems to be sound bites and slogans. You point out in the article maybe tying this to Western guilt over having conquered the world or something. You know, they seem to tie it to these types of things rather than logically sitting down and thinking through this as you might on your own rather than this madness of the crowds. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You make a great point. And just from the mail that I get, I write a lot about global warming for CEI and the Washington Examiner, and a lot of different publications, and I get a lot of mail. And the mail that I get from people who disagree with me, I don't get a lot of mail saying, "Dear Mr. Patterson, I respectfully disagree with your opinion, and here's why."
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of mail saying, you know, "You blankety-blank expletive, how dare you, you're a criminal, you should be tried," you know, very emotional. You're exactly right. This is an emotion. And I think the source of that emotion is primarily twofold. One, it's no coincidence that the birth of the modern radical environmental movement coincided with the collapse of the Soviet Union and communism worldwide. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who have anti-capitalist tendencies, who hate industry and free markets by their very nature,
mm-hmm.
gravitated very naturally from communism and those sorts of ideals into the environmental movement.
Interesting.
And it was a very smooth transition, actually. And the second one is, you know, in every age, there's this sense among some people that the world is ending, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the world is ending because we did something.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, because a lot of environmentalists claim to be secular and whatnot, it's a very religious feeling that they have, that we are the cause of the Earth's destruction, and we must repent, and we can repent by doing carbon credits, and yet they at the same time look down and sort of mock conventionally religious people for their beliefs. It's a very strange thing. I think there's a religious aspect to it, and there's a ideological aspect to it as well.
I think you're completely right. I've done a number of interviews with the folks from the Cornwall Alliance, and a couple of them have really stressed that religious element as well. You pointed to this, or alluded to this, that somebody benefits over this. That's the thing that we need to look at. You make this quote, or this quote appears in your opinion piece. It says, "Why do so many still cling to the hope of climate change catastrophe? The scientists offer their own view in the journal. Quote, alarmism over climate is of great benefit to many, providing government funding for academic research and a reason for government bureaucracies to grow," unquote. Well, here we have it. not only is there a religious element to this, the worship of the earth itself and, you know, the highly secularist viewpoint, world viewpoint, but we find that it's also a political point as well, and there's a tremendous amount of money following after this view. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Money is, in this instance, I think, very, very corrosive. I think it's corrupted both policymakers and scientists, and not maybe not consciously, but I think, you know, once environmentalists got the notion that they could get funding for their research or their work by convincing a policymaker, a politician, a bureaucrat, that the Earth is going to blow up because we're doing something wrong, and if you give me money, I can help study this, and maybe we can figure out how to get rid of this. You know, once that connection was established, it was very bad for both the bureaucrat or politician and the scientist, because it made it very hard for them to step back, you know, and look at the situation objectively. If you're a scientist anywhere in the world and you want to study any old thing at all, let's say it's the mating habits of nesting birds in Aruba, you know, you're more likely to get funding for that research if you can claim a connection to global warming. That's just the way it is. There's so much money out there for global warming research. And so if you're a scientist, you know, you want to, obviously these people have to make a living just like everybody else, and it becomes very, very difficult for them financially to distance themselves from this thing. And it's the same type of going along with the crowd thing that we've been talking about. You know, there's a reason people would jump on board. It's like a self-perpetuating motion machine, if you will. Mm-hmm. Everyone in my field is doing this, so I got to get in on it too. And then it becomes dangerous to your own well-being to speak out against it. But we're seeing more scientists are speaking out against it, which I go into in my piece, which is a very good sign, I think.
Well, I was going to ask you that. How bad has the ClimateGate scandal, and also now that a number of other scientists, a lot of times they don't say anything until they're leaving, when they left and have spoken out now against the data and the political element involved in this research, how bad has that actually damaged the movement? Has it just damaged it on the surface and, you know, the government is still going pell-mell after this, regardless of what, you know, these statements that are made against it? Where are we at right now?
Well, I think we're at a very dangerous position because ClimateGate, which for your listeners that don't know, there was a leak of emails among some of the top climate scientists in the world in 2009 and again in 2011, revealing that they were hiding data that disagreed with their findings. They were conspiring to shut out opposite points of view. They made them look very, very bad, and it made the science look even more dubious than those of us skeptics had even thought. Now, the answer to your question is, I don't think it damaged them as much as it should have, for the very simple reason that it wasn't widely reported among what we would call the liberal or mainstream media. I mean, obviously, if you read certain publications, you would have heard of it. But I have liberal friends of mine who are staunch environmentalists. You know, I mentioned ClimateGate, they have no idea what I'm talking about. You know why? Because they read the New York Times, and they listen to NPR. And that's a shame. I mean, you know, it's really bad when mainstream publications are not reporting findings that are damaging to their own ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple reason they just don't want to report that. I mean, there's a sense among a lot of environmentalists, not all, but a lot, that it's okay to lie or it's okay to do bad things because the cause is so just. You know, it's a real shame. It's a real shame. There's a lot of covering up for this sham science, and a lot of it is in journalism, and there's a reason for it. You know, the global warming movement gave us a whole new breed of journalists, the environmental journalists.
Mm. Yeah.
And just like environmental scientists, they have a vested interest in maintaining the scare among the public. Literally, their jobs depend on it. So.
Yeah, exactly. The tentacles that come off of this are just really far-reaching. When you use that idea of it being one possibly the most destructive deception of modern times, I agree, just because the tentacles of it reach into the political realm, the economic realm, the scientific world, academia. It's just into the church now, because even portions of the church are buying into, you know, what would Jesus drive, you know, this idea. We really see this thing has really got its tentacles across the board. The Christians, the evangelicals, let me speak specifically there, they want to be good stewards of the earth, so there are portions of this message that resonates with them. They say, you know, God gave us this earth, and we shouldn't just abuse it, and, you know, we're not for going out and just dumping oil in the street or something. So we want to do good, but they don't fully buy into everything that's taking place. And there haven't been a whole lot of people really articulating a good, honest position here that we should take. And so we're really grateful for folks like you that put together articles like this that we can say, wait a second, here's a reasoned approach to what is taking place that, you know, we can feel good about putting this on our Facebook page and passing it around and saying, hey, take a look at this. Do you find that is a growing trend among people? Are the more reasoned approach starting to get out there a little bit?
You know, it's difficult to tell. I think, you know, in most recent public survey, surveys of public opinion on this, global warming ranks very low in the public's mind as far as problems they should be concerned about. It's hard to know if this is just a virtue of the economy being so bad, and so everything else sort of gets put on the back burner, and maybe if things were better, people would worry about that more. It's hard to know. I suspect that for a lot of people, your average person out there in the heartland, it's starting to not pass the smell test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think, and a lot of what environmentalists will tell you is that if you're not a climate scientist, then you don't get to have an opinion on it. And I get this type of email all the time. You know, oh, you're not a climate scientist, so why should anyone trust your opinion? And I say to them, and what about Al Gore? You know, Al Gore did terrible in science classes when he was at college, and yet everyone listens to him.
Right.
My point is that you don't have to be a scientist to make reasoned judgments about what is likely and what is dangerous. If you have an average intelligence, you can take a look at an issue, you can read both sides, and you can make a judgment. And for people who tell you you can't do that, that's when you know they're lying to you. That's when you know something's wrong. Anytime someone says, you don't know what you're talking about, I do, so you shut up and listen to me. That's when you know something's wrong.
Exactly. We're not afraid of looking at the facts and looking at them objectively. We can look, but we just want to actually have facts. We don't want them to be skewed. That's the point here. Matt, thank you very much. Thank you for writing this article and bringing this to folks' attention. I'm going to link to this article out on my blog today so folks can go there. I'll give them that page here in just a moment. But, Matt, thank you very much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Okay. That was Matt Patterson. Matt is the Warren Brooks Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's also the senior editor at the Capital Research Center. As I just mentioned a moment ago, I'll go ahead and link his article that we're talking about today. It's out on the Fox News opinion page. It was published out there on February 17th, but it's entitled Global Warming, The Great Delusion, and that book that he spoke about, Extraordinarily Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. There's a link to that book as well if you're interested in checking that out, and so you can go out there and read that. I wanted to make sure that I let you know about a couple of items here, program notes. One is tomorrow on the broadcast I'll be speaking with both Kent and Carrie Hughes. Will be with me on the broadcast. We'll be talking about Kent's latest book, actually both of their latest book. They're both contributors to it. But Kent and Carrie Hughes' their latest book entitled The Disciplines of a Godly Young Man. That's going to be an interesting discussion with them. I also mentioned the idea of the upcoming Pastors Fellowship that's going to take place. That information is out on my website as well. You can go to knowingthetruth.org to find out more about that. It's only $6 to attend. I also give away, not only will lunch be provided, but I always give away a lot of goodies there as well, some great books and those types of things, so you don't want to miss that. And then the CEF, Child Evangelism Fellowships, their golf outing is coming up. I'm going to put a link to that out on my website today. You don't want to miss that as well. Go out there and click on that link, and it'll take you right to the page where you can register for the upcoming Child Evangelism Fellowship, their annual golf classic. It's going to take place at the Cliffs of Glassy at least one day. The other day is at another great golf course here in the area as well. You don't want to miss that. Remember this. The Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you tomorrow right here on Knowing the Truth.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660. WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.